So you can you can talk freely.
I can and should speak, even though I have performance anxiety. I don't know. I can talk in front of other people. Talking in front of a computer is harder for some.
So why don't talk to the computer. Talk to me.
I know. It's right there. Recording my every word.
Hey everyone, this is Roger.
And this is not Allie.
No, you are not Allie, but everyone is still listening to the Work Week Wrap-Up. Allie isn't feeling well today, so she couldn't make it, but I do have a guest joining me, and that's Kate.
Hi everyone!
How's it going?
It's going all right. How are you doing, Roger? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. How was your week? This is the Work Week Wrap-Up, after all.
It is. It was a pretty good week. It went by pretty quickly with the holiday on Monday.
It was a short week, yeah.
But somehow seemed to last as long or longer than a regular week. So that's a bonus, right?
Sure. I mean, you had to cram 5 days of work into 4 days, so.
That always happens, right? You're like, yeah. Oh, I have a day off. But really, it's just do the same amount of work in 4 days.
Yes, agreed. So, did you happen to pay attention to the world over the course of the week? Do you have
I normally pay attention to the world, although it has a tendency to be sometimes upsetting and distressing, as you and Allie have talked about. But this week I've been a little out of the loop, with the possible exception of the news associated with the Paris Agreement and Trump's recommendation that the U.S. kind of back out of that agreement because we're doing the heavy lifting for the rest of the world. So that's a little upsetting, given that everyone kind of came together in order to, both industrialized nations and less industrialized nations to work together in a common goal against climate change. To take a kind of isolationist view there is, pretty disheartening and pretty upsetting. So that was unfortunate, I thought.
Yes, and it wasn't just a recommendation. He officially pulled us out of the Paris Accord. And we are now one of three countries that are not part of it.
Is it Syria and
Nicaragua?
Yeah, Nicaragua. Yeah.
We are now the third country. 195 countries are still involved, which is a very good number. It's just sad that we're not part of that.
I'm hoping that gets revisited. I was really reminded of there was a terrific clip that was floating around the internet during some hearings associated with the EPA, I believe. I'm not a political wonk or expert, so I may have some of the facts a little fuzzy here.
I don't think any of us are political experts, but we try and research before we talk.
We play one on podcasts. There was a pretty terrific clip where a representative from the state of Michigan was speaking to someone representing the EPA. It may have been the head of the EPA. That person basically said, it's really a state issue to take care of clean water in the Lakes region, the Great Lakes. That representative's response was, actually, it's in humanity's interest to have healthy water in the largest body of water in the northern part of, or in the entire United States. The largest fresh water comes from the Great Lakes. So it's actually not something that's specific to the states directly around it. It's something that impacts the entire country. So I'm kind of feeling that parallel here, and I'm kind of, wishing that we would take that approach and we would be a little more global and considerate in our overall perspective.
It would be nice if we did.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now that is not good for climate change, or because of climate change, and meanwhile we're deciding that climate change doesn't exist, apparently.
Yeah.
Even though all of these things are happening.
Yeah, science is a pretty wonderful thing, and I think it can be depended upon, and I hope that those in power choose to start to depend on it and, not kind of go with this alternative...
Alternative facts?
Yeah, alternative facts.
Well, some of those alternative facts were in articles this week that I happened to find.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So one of the things that I found was that the Great Barrier Reef can, if we continue on the path that we're going on as a planet, the Great Barrier Reef can no longer sustain life.
I just got chills with you saying that. That makes me so sad. So I have, like...
And it can no longer be saved either at this point. If we don't start working on it now, it can't be saved. It's going to go.
So it's, like, irretrievable, the damage that's happening at this very moment in time. Like,
yes. If we continue to do what we're doing, yes.
Yeah.
Which is why the Paris Accord is kind of important to save things like that. And the Great Barrier Reef... obviously in Australia, is not the only one. U.S. has coral reefs on its coasts that are also losing all of their life because of the pollution.
And I would imagine around the territories as well. I personally had the opportunity to live on a U.S. territory, Guam, which is surrounded by a coral reef.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very common thing to do. It actually broke... the waves that kind of come in from the ocean,
sure.
So it's a protective,
yep.
Like reef, so that there wasn't bad kind of water or waves. So you can snorkel anywhere, all the time, anytime. And I was a little kid, and I was literally swimming around the reefs with like hundreds of different kinds of fishes and plants and everything. And those are really amazing experiences and memories.
Yeah.
And the fact that those are not in the same shape that they were even when I was a child, right? Like, they're probably decimated compared to, I you know, would be afraid to see what those pictures look like. But it's such an interesting ecosystem or environment that not many people necessarily have the opportunity to be exposed to. And the fact that we're, you know, literally killing it is... I can't think of more words besides disheartening and depressing and upsetting.
Yes.
But they've been coming up a lot already in this conversation. So
yeah.
I don't have better alternatives. It's just sad.
I don't know that there is a better alternative, because at this point, scientists have said that if we don't do something now, the U.S. coral reefs will be gone within decades. Like, completely gone.
Podcast listeners, I'm making a sad face. I know that that's not the appropriate
reaction. It does not
translate
to sound.
It doesn't come across very well, but yeah, imagine a big sad face right here. I don't, yeah.
There's no words for the fact that we're pulling out of the Paris Accord. And if that wasn't bad enough, I don't know if you heard on one of our previous episodes, we talked about the cracks in Antarctica.
Yes.
Yep. One of those split again this week, and it's very close to just breaking off. An entire sheet of Antarctica will break off.
Again, I'm not built for radio, because I'm just looking at Roger in horror, which continues to not translate. But
your silence says a lot too.
We're literally breaking the planet.
We are
literally breaking it.
Yes.
And it is...
And we have an opportunity to fix it.
And we're not. And we're just...
Well, our national government is not. But one of the things that I saw this week was that Trump, during his speech where he talked about backing out of the Paris Accord, said that he was voted in to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris. And then the mayor of Pittsburgh said, "We stand with Paris." So I thought that was good. I mean, if we take it down to the state and the city level and we do the right thing as individuals, it doesn't matter what he says or does. If we're still following through and doing better for our environment within our own communities, we'll still be helpful. It'd be nice if we had the funds of the national level to assist us in that, but I mean...
Well, and the support and the buy-in, right? You know... Just you know, being unified on that front. But I think you make a great point, Roger, that there are lots of locally elected officials at the state level, at the, you know, county or municipal level, who have this commitment and are probably introducing new measures to you know, policy measures that would improve the overall quality of our climate and our environment. But you know, it sets such a terrible example.
Absolutely.
You know, that this mentality is if I think it hurts me, and I'm not sure, I mean, that argument is nonsense, I think. But if it hurts me or if it's neutral to me, but it helps someone else, then I'm not winning, right? And I'm also using air quotes a lot because that's also helpful on podcasts and the radio. But just this lack of empathy for any position that anyone else might be being in. And I think that's the symptomatic problem that I'm seeing, that I'm reacting to in this administration, that, you know, if it doesn't matter to me, then I'm not going to protect others who might be more vulnerable and might be more impacted, and whether that's women, whether that's immigrants, whether that's people of color, whether that's the LGBT community, or whether that's, like, the flipping earth.
You don't have to say flipping.
Then, well, sometimes,
I mean,
flipping
can.
Is, you know, just the right amount of emphasis that you
sure.
need.
Sure, you absolutely can.
Roger is giving me permission to be profane, I think.
Well, Allie does it every week.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This inability to put yourself in anyone else's shoes, to say, you know, the example that's bringing to mind immediately is, you know, why should men, or especially older men, pay for healthcare that includes maternity coverage for women? Like, you know,
right.
Your head explodes when you hear that because of the obvious, like, so where did you come from? Or, like, maybe
right.
Where did your kids come from?
And who paid for it when you were our age?
Exactly. but just this, you know, kind of lack of consideration for other human beings and living things in the world, or a willingness or interest in understanding, you know, your perspective, or that it could be different, or someone else's perspective could be different. Ugh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I got away from Antarctica breaking apart.
No, but I mean, it's all falling under climate change, which is now being drastically affected by the fact that one of the biggest players in the Paris Accord is pulling out.
Do people ever say to you, like, with all this talk about climate change, it's, you know, it seems really cold today or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, do people, like, are, like, it's supposed to be, you know, global warming, so why are we having so many blizzards in the winter? Like, do people ever say that to you? Like, casual acquaintances, family members, that kind of thing? Like, what do you say to people who, like, jokingly, I think, but maybe with, like, a little nugget of seriousness behind it, say things like that?
I don't know.
Has anyone ever said that to you?
No. That doesn't mean I necessarily surround myself with people that are fully behind climate change. But though, if anybody that is around me doesn't believe in it, they've never expressed it.
Yeah.
And I could... There are a few people that I know that I could see saying that to me, and I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if they were behind climate change. Sure. I could see them going either way, but they haven't expressed anything in general, so I don't know what their opinion on it is. But I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, Allie and I have talked about, jokingly, how it was so hot here a couple weeks ago, but it snowed in Colorado, so clearly not global warming. But again, we were clearly joking about that because we are aware that it is an issue. But, I mean, it was like almost 70 degrees today in Maine,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't seem like it's that hot, but we are very far north compared to most of the rest of the country. So 70 degrees is pretty good for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Last year in July, we had a week where we were about 100 degrees, and that's ridiculous for Maine. That's way over what we should be.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get there again this year. And I wonder how much our governor will put into climate change, or if he's going to fall in the same footsteps as Trump, because he is very much like Trump. And it may be a difficult 2 years until we get to the next governor that could potentially help us work towards that while we wait for the national administration to change their mind.
Yeah, but he's like Trump in the kind of contrary, how closely, like, aligned policy-wise is he with Trump?
That I don't know, but his actions
yeah.
and his, what's the word I'm looking for, his beliefs about other types of humans, are very closely aligned to what Trump is. So I feel like they would be very similar in a lot of policies. Maybe not all. Maybe he actually believes in climate change. But my gut reaction is that he doesn't, because he lives in Maine and we had blizzards over the winter. So clearly it doesn't happen.
Right, right. And I guess leadership style, right, is probably how they're most...
Very much. Very much.
And I use that, term leadership extremely loosely.
Yes.
It might be more like dictatorial style.
Yeah. I can't tell you. Oh, okay. Bang the table,
people. Sorry, everyone.
I can't tell you how many articles I saw leading up to the national election last year about how everybody was saying, hey, if you want to see what a Trump administration looks like, look to Maine. Because it's true. We've dealt with it for almost 8 years now. Mm-hmm. It'll be 8 years next year, and then we have the election, and thankfully he can't be elected again. But
right. That's
a whole different issue.
Right.
We've talked about that at length.
Indeed.
But along the lines of the Paris Accord, there was some other good news that came from it, not directly, but, well, I guess kind of directly. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, big technology company, obviously, has publicly blasted Trump for pulling us out of the Paris Accord. Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla and other companies aligned with Tesla, has blasted Trump for pulling us out of the Paris Accord, and also walked away from Trump's technology council.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to be a part of the administration at all, which I think is huge because those two guys are two of, if not the biggest technology people in the world right now, most recognizable in the world right now. And the fact that they are putting themselves against, they clearly are standing for the environment by putting themselves against Trump in this situation, which is good because technology is not necessarily the best at reducing carbon emissions. They're getting better, but it's not completely green yet. So it shows that it reaffirms that they are working towards being more green with their products and their company, I think.
So it seems like technology companies tend to have, like, big technology companies today, we're talking about Google and Apple and, you know, whatever, they seem to have not an overt political philosophy, but if something, like, really, you know, hits the road, then they're willing to come out and make these kinds of statements. Why is that? And why is technology kind of the sector where those things come out?
Well, I think there's amongst some people, and I think it's a dwindling opinion at this point, but I think there's opinions amongst some people that because of all the factories and throughout the world that are involved in making all of the different parts for technology and then the factories that put all those parts together into one piece that's then sold, that's a lot of carbon emissions being emitted in all those different factories. And I think now we have leadership in technology companies that realize that that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And are trying to reduce those emissions and be more sustainable for the planet while also still putting out quality products. So when they are working towards bettering the planet and furthering the lifespan of the planet and everything we have on it, and then the administration of their country says, no, we don't care, I think that's kind of an opportunity for them to say, we're not changing our policy. And I think that's really what's... they're kind of reaffirming that they are still going to work to reduce carbon emissions within their organization because that's important to them.
But is it just, am I wrong, or does it seem like there are more technology companies that do that than agribusiness companies or cosmetic companies, or what is it about...
You're not wrong.
Like being in a technology... Or is it that they all came out of Silicon Valley, which is, you know, liberal California and, you know, a blue state where that has a lot of, you know, emphasis on, like, those progressive values? Is that it? Or
it could be. I mean, you mentioned cosmetics companies, and I feel like there are not as many big player cosmetic companies that are from the United States as are technology companies.
Oh, good call.
So I think that's part of it as well. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not doing the same thing. We just may not know about it because they're not from here, and we're not getting that in the national news. Agribusiness, I think, is probably very reluctant because of the money they make on things like oil,
mm-hmm.
and the crops they produce and what's required for that. And I think they are, I don't know that they necessarily want to say that they're against climate change and against these things, but I think they're a little bit more reluctant to put themselves in a bad position with the resources they still rely on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas technology doesn't need to rely on oil to be created. Like, Apple has multiple solar array farms throughout the country, and through, I think throughout the world at this point. I think they've got a couple in other countries as well, where they are creating their own solar energy and powering their stores and their factories and their headquarters on solar energy. They have stores in America that are 100% powered by solar energy. They're not powered by anything else. So, I mean, they don't need to have oil to run.
But that feeds my point. They made the choice to have access to those solar fields and, you know, arrays. So really, the point is, yay, technology people and everyone else catch up.
I mean, as technology grows more and becomes more accessible and more affordable, it will probably happen more. But I think that's also probably part of the issue with the agribusiness is that it's not affordable to necessarily go out and get yourself a solar farm to power your crop farm.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheaper to go with oil and gas and, you know, the resources we've been using because they've been around for so long and we get them so readily. Solar panels are not cheap yet. They're getting there, but they're not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they get to the point where anybody can go down to the store and buy solar panel roofing, which is coming, Elon Musk's, I forget, I can't think of the name of the company, but it's one of his other companies that's not Tesla, is creating solar panel shingles
for your roof.
They're like the same size as a normal shingle. They look like a shingle. You don't even know that they're solar panels, and you just put them on your roof like you would normal shingles, and it powers your house. It's not cheap yet, but it'll get there. He'll get it there. It may take a few years, but he'll get it there. And so because it's not necessarily affordable right now, it's not attainable for a lot of those farmers and other agribusiness people that can't afford to spend a ton of money up front.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked into getting solar panels in Maine? Is that something you've ever...
Yep. There's a big push in the area where I live, further up the coast, to have more solar panels. And they did kind of a group buy-in type thing where a bunch of people signed up to commit to purchase solar panels, and I looked into that. It was still a little expensive for what we could afford, but it was definitely cheaper than if I just went to the and did it on my own,
mm-hmm.
Because it was so many people buying in bulk that it became more affordable. And we could, but it wouldn't have been the hidden solar panels that are the shingles. It would have been like a big piece of metal with all the different solar panels on it attached to the roof, and it would have been multiples of those. So it wouldn't have been necessarily the nicest thing to look at either. So
is there a state tax incentive for installing solar panels in Maine?
I don't know. I didn't get that far.
Yeah, because I lived in another state previously, and I believe, because it wouldn't have been a national subsidy, right? It wouldn't have been a cut on your national taxes.
Well, they did national taxes on hybrid and electric cars.
They did. I remember that. So actually, maybe. I don't think it was national. I feel like it was a state program where you got a huge tax windfall if you installed the solar panel. And a lot of people I knew at the time kind of took advantage of that in order to, you know, get them in for not as nearly as much money. And it was a, you know, big incentive. It was very helpful.
The problem for many people right now is that something like that would be, you have to front the money up front and then get your tax break the next year.
Yeah.
And that's still a lot of money up front that people don't necessarily have.
No, you're absolutely right.
So anything else that you found interesting this week? I don't want to monopolize all of it.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot. I didn't do very much homework for this, which is probably
You weren't expected to.
Good. Well, I'm fulfilling my... filling expectations by not doing much homework. Let's see what happened interesting this week. Nope. I have nothing. I have nothing. I'm fried. It's Friday.
It is.
I have nothing.
I have, I do have one other thing that I found interesting and that we can go off of. NASA has announced that they are going to send a new probe into space.
Is that true? Like, yes. Do they have the authority to say that? Like, or yeah. Do they have the budget for it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We talked
last week about how their budget is going up. They're cutting certain programs, but the overall budget is going up.
Okay.
So they are putting a new probe into space next year, and this probe is going to go into the sun.
For what purpose?
To study the chemical makeup of the sun and to understand how it is formed versus how it turns into a black hole.
Well, couldn't they just listen to the song by They Might Be Giants called The Sun, which contains all of that information?
I mean, they probably could. I don't know how accurate that would be. I think they're looking for more accuracy or confirmation, at least.
Do you know this song? Like, it's super catchy.
Yeah, I've heard parts of it. I don't listen to a lot of music right now.
I'm using, like, all of my will not to embarrass myself on the interwebs by singing small portions of this song. But it goes through all sorts of facts about the sun.
Are they all true facts?
I believe that they were, I think it was from a record, like a 50s record that like little kids used to listen to for educational purposes, and they covered it and put it on an album. And then I saw them like more recently, like within the past few years, and they were like, because of science, we've had to update the song, and they like switched out some of the like words in a funny way.
So they're trying to keep up with it.
They are trying to keep up with it.
Okay.
Yeah. But as I understand it, the sun is a mass of incandescent gas. A gigantic nuclear furnace.
Sure.
Where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. That's the beginning of that song, which I said in a spoken word version. Everyone should go listen to that song on Spotify or whatever, you know, I probably shouldn't recommend a specific listening forum. Should I? We're not being sponsored by Spotify yet.
No, we're not. We're not being sponsored by anybody, so... their probe is going to obviously melt when it gets to, it's going to burn up when it gets to the sun, but it's designed to withstand 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, so it'll get closer than we've ever been, and they're looking at things like solar winds, they're looking at the sunspots and solar flares that come off of the sun, and how they're formed and why they happen, and things like that. And then we're obviously going to get more details as to the chemical makeup of the sun, because we can only speculate since we can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
And there we have good science and technology to get pretty accurate, but this will give us an opportunity to be even more accurate.
So you send the probe over.
Yep.
And it's transmitting back.
Yep.
It's
yep.
transmitting data the entire path. Is that how it works? It's like collecting, or at this point that they turn on the data collection.
Right. So it's probably not going to transmit back the entire time, but it's going to go a certain distance, and then it's going to say, okay, start transmitting, and it's going to transmit back to NASA, and it'll just send back probably, I don't know how periodically it would, if it's going to be seconds every seconds, or every few minutes, or every 20 minutes or what, but it'll send back information as it has it.
So it just, like, sniffs out, like, all the chemicals and compounds and elements and everything that are around, and it sends that data back. And then it explodes. It dies. It burns. It melts. It whatever.
It won't be the first time either. I mean, we have a probe going around Saturn right now, just doing laps around Saturn. The laps are getting smaller and smaller on purpose,
mm-hmm.
so that it can just burn up in the atmosphere of Saturn when we're done using it.
I know this is an inanimate object, and this is totally valid in the name of science, but I feel kind of sad for that probe.
Well, I mean, sure, but at the same time, one of NASA's values, I guess, is that they don't want to explore space and then leave junk behind.
No, that's, yeah.
So a lot of the missions are becoming more and more designed to dispose of whatever they sent out there.
So it's not floating around the universe
right.
until the end of time?
Sure. Well, we do have one of those, too, on purpose. But, I mean, that's the one that took
pictures of Pluto. Is that the one that has the record on it?
I don't know what it looks like. looks like. I didn't look at pictures of it, but I know it's the one that took pictures of Pluto.
Well, there have been, actually, this is timely. I do have something to add, because there have been a lot of stories in the past week about the probe. It might have been the Voyager probe. Does that sound like a thing? Did I just make that up? Again,
I feel like that's a thing.
Not fact-checking. Not good fact-checking yet on my portion of the podcast. But there was a project to collect, you know, because this was going to go out into outer space and we knew we weren't going to get it back, people saw it as an opportunity to convey a message to any potential life outside of our solar system. So they took this massive gold, unbreakable, unmuckwithable, like record, like an LP instead of, you know, your, I can't think of what band you would have an LP at, the Rolling Stones album or whatever, it's, you know, sitting on your record player.
Sure.
It's a super awesome gold record that has recorded, carefully curated, everything that humanity might want to express to another culture. So, like, Carl Sagan was involved like, selecting things, and there was a whole team of people, and it, like, had the sound of, you know, babies laughing and people kissing and folk music from all around the world. It might be an anniversary of the release of that, because I've seen and heard a fair number of stories, like, in the past week about it, and I've just been thinking about, you know, how you choose what is most or quintessentially human to record in that kind of format and then present to a potential other life being. I just find that fascinating.
Well, I mean, they made that decision, and I just looked it up. The Voyager probe, Voyager 1 and 2 spacecrafts, were launched in 1977, I think was the first launch. So whatever's on that is from 1977.
Yeah.
Which is clearly not accurate 40 years later.
But bonus points for me getting the name of the thing
yes,
right.
Yes, absolutely. The Voyager 1 probe, I think it was the Voyager 1 probe, was the one that took pictures of Jupiter, Saturn, and eventually Pluto. And I think, if I am reading this correctly, Voyager 2 got pictures of Uranus and Neptune. And both have gone further away from Earth and the sun than Pluto is. So they are out just going.
Pluto got to keep its name even though it's not a planet anymore,
well,
right?
Yeah, we don't take names away from things. We just tell them they can't be a planet anymore. I mean, why would we take the name away from Pluto?
It's a ridiculous question.
Okay.
There's no reason to have asked that question.
Okay. Although in recent months, I think it's been recent months, within the last year, if I remember, I don't know, maybe a little more than a year, but I think it's within the last year, there has been scientists that have determined that even though Pluto's not a planet now, the reason why Pluto stays where it is in its orbit must be because there is a larger planet, bigger than Saturn and Jupiter, out way beyond as what we can see.
I'm making a very surprised and interested face now.
You're very good at narrating what you're doing.
Well, I realized that I was giving you a lot on my face, and I was like, this is not coming across.
No, but that's okay. So they are theorizing that there's a Planet X somewhere out there that is, I think they determined that in order for Pluto to stay where it is, it needs to be a certain size that is bigger than Jupiter, which is our biggest planet, and it needs to be further away. It needs to be like 9 times further away past Pluto than Pluto is from the sun. Like, it is way out there in order to create the right kind of gravitational field to keep Pluto in its orbit.
So it's Pluto is a satellite of this mystery planet.
No,
because it's staying in the...
Right, Pluto's staying in its orbit, and there's a distance from Sun to Pluto.
Okay.
And then this other Planet X that's being theorized is 9 times that distance beyond Pluto.
So, like, it's the Pluto is suspended on rubber bands between this planet and the Sun.
Right. Right.
Astronomy was never my strong suit, but it is fascinating.
It is.
There's just so much there that's either nothing or something.
Yep.
And you don't know.
Right.
you know what it's like? The oceans, which we're destroying.
Right.
We could probably be destroying outer space if we got out there soon.
I wouldn't be surprised if we did.
If we got out there?
Yeah, if we polluted space just as quickly as we pollute the planet, I wouldn't be surprised. As much as there was a comment made, this was a few years ago now, I know for a fact, that we know more about space than we know about our own oceans.
I think I've heard that also.
We have explored more of space than we have of our own oceans.
Yeah.
Because we currently can't get to the bottom of the deepest parts of the ocean, but at the same time, we're not really trying as hard as we are to try in space.
Like, yeah, we'll get there. It's right down the street. We'll just, no.
I don't even think they're doing that. That is how ridiculous it is, because it's so much more easily accessible being on the same planet as us. Sure, the pressure under the water when you get that far down is very high, and you need to make vehicles that can sustain that pressure and still explore. But, I mean, we make ships that go into space.
Right, right. It seems like the environments are equally inhospitable, and if you can adjust to one, you can
adjust to the
other.
You should be able to adjust the other way to the other one. Yes, you would think. So, at some point, hopefully we learn more about our oceans and the deepest parts of them. But, I mean, there are things down there that we don't even know about. I'm sure there are species of animals down there and living creatures that we don't even know about.
Yes, and they could have... Everyone always says this. But they could have the cure for cancer down there, man.
Sure.
Couldn't they?
Maybe.
They could.
Sure.
Until we kill it.
Until we know for certain, that's definitely a possibility.
Right?
Anyway, how was your week otherwise, aside from all of this political, climate change, science?
It was a good week. It was busy. I was doing stuff most of the week. Did it rain a lot this week? It was gray.
The early part of the week, yeah. We had just... random flash thunderstorm yesterday.
I love thunderstorms.
It was like 72 degrees yesterday at like 1 o'clock, and by 1:30 I think it was downpour.
Yes.
And then by like 2:30 it was done.
Yes.
Which is kind of ridiculous how fast that moved in.
It's kind of fun though.
Yeah. It cooled things off for a little bit, and then it got hot again today.
It was warm today, although I'm trying to be careful not to immediately shift from complaining about one version of weather to immediately complaining about the next version. I'm trying to be mindful about that and be more appreciative. Because I was cold before, and now mm-hmm. I'm warm.
Sure.
So that's good.
I prefer to be warm.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't like cold.
Hmm.
We have a coworker who has said to me that when they make the decision to stop wearing a jacket... at some point during, like, the spring, that they stand by that decision until fall rolls around. They made that decision, and then it's cold for, like, a week and a half. So...
that seems particularly obstinate. That seems like...
a little bit.
Yeah. Like, you're arm-wrestling Mother Nature, but she's not playing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I kind of do the same thing. I will not wear a heavy jacket again until it's... beyond the point where I should, in October, start wearing a heavy jacket again.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped over a month ago now. I would get up in the morning and it would be cold outside. I'd get in the car, turn the heat on, and then after like 5 minutes, I'd be fine.
Right.
It's just going from the car to the building, whichever building it happens to be. But that's obviously going away now because it's not as cold.
Right.
And I will do that again come fall until I'm like, okay, this is too cold and I can't stand it anymore. And then I'll start wearing my winter jacket again. But it'll be longer than most other people.
Right. So my sister has this theory that where you kind of grew up in your first awakening formative years... see, this is a unique situation for us, maybe, because we grew up in the military, so we moved around a lot.
Okay.
And then we were comfortable ending up in different places, right? So I didn't feel like, oh, I grew up in, you know, small town USA forever. I have to, like, you know, go to college and come back here or whatever. So I was pretty okay moving anywhere. But my sister, like... hit like 4 or 5, kindergarten kind of age, when we were living on Guam, which I've already talked about, which is a tropical island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It never gets like above or below. It's like 65 to 70, at least when we lived there. climate change. Maybe it's warmer now.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. It used to be like between 65 and 79 degrees 100% of the time. Like, it was never any cooler, which was awesome. It was never any warmer, which was awesome.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, no, it's pretty perfect. Like, living on an island Pacific is not a bad way to live.
No.
It was super fun. But, so she had her formative years there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, I was the same age when we lived in Minnesota and got, you know, 2 feet of snow on a regular basis.
Sure, yeah.
So
are you older or younger?
I'm older.
Okay.
So she lives in Atlanta now, which is hot as Hades, and I don't know why anyone ever... I guess they all have air conditioning everywhere, so that makes a little part of the difference. So she claims she gravitated to living in the South and living in Atlanta because her dawning human years were when she lived in Guam and it was warm and toasty there. And she claims that I live in New England where it's frosty and cold because my dawning human years were somewhere that were frosty and cold. Can we, for once and for all, tell my sister she's an idiot on
sure.
this podcast?
I grew up in Connecticut,
yes.
which is part of New England. And while I do still live in Maine... And I lived in Connecticut for most of my life. I went to school in Rhode Island, was there for a bunch of years during school and after, and then we moved to Maine. As much as I live here, I don't want to live here. I don't like the cold. I'd rather live in Florida. So I think that's kind of counterintuitive to what she's saying.
Yes. And everyone who retires goes down south. So
sure.
It's just a matter of everyone wants to be warm, but some of us, like, put up with cold to have seasons and not live in Florida.
Sure. Yes. Okay. That's one of the things that Brady and I have talked about. We, at one point, I don't know when, we talked about potentially moving to Florida at one point, and one of her arguments against it was the changing in seasons makes you appreciate the warmer weather more after you've been cold than just living in warm weather all the time.
I agree with her.
So, yep.
That's legit.
Yep, sure. I mean, I don't know if we necessarily need to stay in Maine for that. I mean, I like it here, don't get me wrong, but if it was a little less cold, I'd be okay with that too.
See, I only moved to Maine like a year ago, and when we were talking about places we were thinking about moving, one of the places that was very, very high on our list is Austin, Texas, which kind of has a Portland vibe with different geography. Like, it's a small, walkable... You know, people like to, you know, there's music and bars and restaurants and, you know, all of, you know, it's the only place in Texas that anyone who's liberal or progressive probably would consider moving or living. It's a completely different state as far as I'm concerned than the rest of Texas. But ultimately, we were like, it's just too damn hot all the time. Like, mm-hmm. we can't, it would be too much of an adjustment to the way that we're used to living. And so we're like, there's lots of advantages, there's lots of benefits, we love the city a lot, but we can't get past the fact that it's like 90 degrees in February or whatever.
Sure.
Like, if it gets fluky and then forget about it, like, it's definitely that warm from like March to October.
I think it was 2009. I went to San Antonio and Corpus Christi, which... they're not necessarily close to each other. There's a drive to get
people
together.
I was gonna
it's like
say,
3 hour
like...
drive. It's not horrible. It's like a 3 hour drive or so. I could be wrong on that. Maybe I'm just misremembering. Maybe it was 4 hours. But on the ride from San Antonio to Corpus Christi, we flew into San Antonio, stayed there for a day. We went down to Corpus Christi for a few days, came back to San Antonio, and then flew out. On the drive from San Antonio to Corpus Christi, their rental car we had a thermometer on it that told us the temperature outside, and it was 120 degrees.
Yeah.
In June.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no need for that. Global warming. People.
There's your proof. Anyway. Anything else you want to share this week?
No, I think I'm impressed that I managed to keep this conversation, my part of the conversation. You did fine, but for
you did
as long
fine
as
too.
I did. For
I
as
know
long as I did.
You were nervous before we started.
There was some trepidation, I'm not gonna lie.
Some?
Yes.
Some. But you did fine. You'll have to come on again.
Thank you,
Ryan. You've done it once, so now you'll be more comfortable next time.
Yes. And I have to come back when Allie's here because I've enjoyed listening to her.
You were supposed to be here with Allie.
We miss Allie. It was good that you had a special guest star lined up.
Yes, because very convenient.
Allie had to bail out at the last minute. We hope Allie is doing better already.
By the time she listens to this, I'm sure she'll be at least a little bit better. And next week, we already know that Allie won't be here, but we have another special guest, different special guest, joining me next week. So
people are banging down the doors to be on the Work Week wrap-up.
Apparently.
Is that the name of the podcast?
Yes.
Excellent.
You got it right. we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that have said they would like to be on it. It's just a matter of getting people scheduled.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to tell people they have to cancel their plans. That's not fair, obviously. So when
that
they
makes
are
it a job and not
yes,
a hobby.
Right,
yes,
right, exactly. So when they're available, we will get them on.
That sounds great. I look forward to it.
Great. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
We have an outro. Do you want to attempt it and read Allie's part?
I will try it.
So thank you all for listening. If you have any interesting stories or items that you'd like us to talk about on future podcasts, you can email us at
workweekwrapup@gmail.com.
Or you can tweet us.
@workweekwrapup_up. No?
Try that again.
How do you say it?
It's @workweekwrap_up.
Oh, it is.
You added an extra up in there.
I did.
That's okay. We got it right. Also, if you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play, more people will find us. And feel free
to do that. I should subscribe.
You haven't subscribed yet?
I just downloaded all the episodes individually.
So, okay. All
terrible right. person.
But you downloaded and listened. Downloads,
yes, I did.
I can still see downloads.
Okay.
So that's. But you should still subscribe. So
yes,
that
I
you
should.
Automatically get next episodes. And so here's hoping to next week's better than last. Bye.
Cheers.